Reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Reset Rebel podcast with me, Jo Yule. And today's guest is Joshua, a British speaker and author. For the past decade, he's been working in different cities worldwide, providing haircuts to men and women experiencing homelessness, amplifying these voices to bring awareness to this issue, and founding a kindness movement called Do Something for Nothing in the process. His message of empathy, vulnerability, and connection comes at an important time in our culture. It serves as a reminder of how we can all make a difference in our own way and how small actions can spark a broader conversation and bring about change. Joshua, welcome to the Reset Rebel podcast.
Buenos dias from here. But yeah, good morning. It's lovely to be with you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure and very excited to see you in action. How's the talk shaping up? How are you feeling about TEDx Ibiza?
Yeah, really, really positively, actually. It's been a process, I'm not going to lie. It's something I knew going into it, the commitment that you have to make to really craft and refine the idea that you want to plan, which for me, I mean, I've been speaking about my work for a long time, but in a very different format, you know, having more time, being able to kind of get up and have a little bit of structure and speak from the heart. But this has been a beautiful process that I've really leaned into. And yeah, the talk's really taken shape. So it's there. It's just in memorization process for this next, month or so before the talk.
We're kind of breadcrumbing the listeners here. We're not allowed to actually give away the real essence of your talk. So it's sort of like you're sort of teasing people really about what's set to come. So I think, you know, maybe you can share with us, you know, how did this movement begin? Like, what was the first moment that you clamped eyes on somebody that you were like, right, this person needs help and I want to do something? Talk us through it.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I think, first of all, I guess for anybody listening to this, to try and like go within in moments in your life that somebody's really received you and somebody's really shown up for you in a moment that you might have needed it the most, when we've really felt perhaps desperate. You know, I think all of us really, if we've lived, you know, a few years on as an adult, at least a couple decades I have on this earth, I feel that we have times where all we need is another human being to be with us in that experience. And seeing homelessness in London, where I was living 10 years ago, you know, grow and grow and grow, there was just something in me that I was always empathetic towards this issue. I didn't have the stigma for me. Maybe it's my upbringing, my background, like having empathy is to why somebody might be there. I wanted to understand that, but I did have a barrier between the interactions of feeling like I could do anything as one person. I'd buy someone like a cup of tea or some food, and the haircut's been this amazing vehicle. It began with one moment with one person, and it was just this incredible way to drop in with them, because, you know, there's this natural intimacy in a platonic way where you're touching somebody and you're cutting their hair, and there's this connection that was built between one person at the beginning. So yeah, it all started with one moment, and something shifted in me through that of seeing this thing, a haircut that I was doing at the time as my job in a salon as a hairdresser, that was right in front of me, that I could go out and reach out and, yes, cut someone's hair and make them feel better, but more than anything, to listen. And yeah, that was how it began.
Who was your first victim?
Derek, his name was, a really beautiful human being and lovely, lovely guy. And he taught me a lot, because he had a beautiful, like just a really lovely, bubbly personality, but that emerged during the haircut. It taught me in just that first instant that he was quite cagey to begin with. And, you know, there's a lot of distrust and like all of us as well, we have layers to protect ourselves, defenses, often unconscious ones, you know, through whatever we've been through in our life, and process of confronting those and opening. It's different for everybody, but in just this small moment, an hour was with somebody, it was this way to like see somebody come out of the shell, and he really felt like he was in his essence afterwards. So he was a really lovely guy. Yeah. And the stories I started to hear, I started to do this more often, you know, and that led me to different interactions around the UK. I traveled to different cities. But the stories I began to hear, wow, just within the first few weeks just were really deep and really powerful in these, like, really dissolving the stigma surrounding this issue. You know, some of the negative things that people might feel when you're just seeing this from the surface, when you see, of course, hard substances, alcohol, sometimes these behaviors, these things that look quite gnarly. They look like they have teeth that they bite, but they're just people in their stuff they're going through. And I, you know, when you sit down next to somebody and as I was able to with the haircut and really drop in with them, I felt these stories were important. So I began to share them. And that's what really took this and it really grew into something bigger.
I mean, I can imagine. I mean, I've seen a lot of your online presence in terms of like the Instagram and the kind of like storytelling that you give, you know, people behind this small act of kindness, and obviously that engages them and sucks them in. But I wonder in terms of like the actual person that you've encountered that you, you know, have that connection to and you realize, you know, they're going to let you in and you're going to have that little moment together. How quickly, you know, does the act of cutting one's hair kind of like allow them to drop their barriers?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think quite early on, I realized it was just about being, you know, we're all, like, as humans, we all have the tools, like we're all very, you know, this is part of who we are, which is being in relation to one another and not just in celebrating one another through the lighter aspects of our life and when we're achieving things, but being able to connect in like the challenges and the depth of the human experience of what might be suffering, what might be pain, trauma, all these different things. I think it's something we've become dislocated from, but actually it's very much within us, the tools we have to show up for people in this way. And that for me, like, it became less about an act of kindness, more just about being with people. And the haircut was always, from early, I realized it was a vehicle. It was a vehicle to do something we all do in our own lives. I think when we have presence and really look to kind of drop into a deeper level with the person in front of us, not just what's confronted, what we're confronted with on the outside, but recognizing one another as much more complex beings in this way. So yeah, it became quite quickly about, for me, the awareness piece early on was, if I go out as helper, quote unquote, because of course I must recognize, like, an honor, the socioeconomic disparity between anybody who, say, has a home and doesn't, who doesn't have shelter. I mean, these are very real things that cause, like, immense distress, but put someone in a very different predicament from someone who might have security and a home. But I realized I can't meet somebody in that way with that dynamic, creating that kind of hierarchy of even like going out, well, I'm going to do something kind, or I'm going to help you in some way. I just go out with my backpack and I'd set up if someone wants a haircut and just try and be with them in that and meet them on a level and try and connect on the same level as them. And that's brought some really beautiful friendships into my life through this process, and also taught me a lot of how I think just giving someone another vantage point in the way that they are treated. Like, I treat people with a lot of dignity and respect, and I go out with a lot of humility to try and learn. I think there's a space there that can emerge where, yeah, a lot of healing can happen, actually. You know, and I don't say that through just myself and this work, from how that happens for me in my own life. You know, when somebody, like, when you really feel heard in that way, or you really feel like safe in a space with somebody in that way, there's some shifts that can take place through that process.
I think perhaps it's like the simple act of not just the physical touch and the sensation of probably people, perhaps, you know, that aren't touched as frequently as perhaps the rest of us. I mean, I would imagine that could be part of the process. But secondarily, it's just the idea of being seen. I mean, I worked in London for, you know, many, many years as a journalist, like rushing around here, there and everywhere on a deadline and not stopping to sort of catch my breath, much of it. But, you know, there was a lot of homeless people, like in W1, where I was, you know, obviously in that media circus of the Square Mile. And, you know, I did go out of my way quite a few times to go and try and cover those kinds of stories. But I think, you know, there's a lot of people there that just don't feel witnessed. They're not seen in any capacity. And I think, you know, that probably part of the haircut concept is, you know, not only are they experiencing that connection through physical touch, but they're actually feeling seen. And that must be like something that actually, you know, really changes their whole perspective.
Yeah. And then that's, yeah, it's Thanks for sharing that, because I think everybody can relate listening to this, what that's like in our lives. Like, we do have very busy lives, and we have, of course, things like we tend to, like the garden of love, if you have a nuclear family and the kind of, you know, your career, whatever that looks like. It's, I think, though, a symptom of the times we're living in many ways, though, that we, you know, in the day-to-day of life, we, it's like slowing down enough, because yes, we don't have that much time. We might have busy lives, but there's so much that can happen even in 5 minutes. And, you know, that those moments you were sharing with people where you maybe went out and tried to, you know, just like see people in that process. I really believe, like, just in the energy that we give in the small moments we have, that's where it all happens. You know, that's where it exists. Someone might have more time to dedicate to whatever that is that they feel, and other people won't. But it's what I'm interested in, really, Joe, is like the, and what, yeah, what's up, I think, really important to me in the practice in my daily life is sort of shifting the perspective of how I interact with the world around me. And that includes the people and everybody in that. It's about a way of being each day, and not to put pressure on yourself. Like, I'm not perfect. I lose it and, you know, get stressed sometimes and whatever, like, you know, if you're tired and overworked. But it's about just recognizing, yeah, there's a choice I think we have each day to sort of show up. And the seeing each other piece is huge. You're right. It's a huge one, because we all know what that feels like in our life, and we all know what it feels like when it's the opposite. You know, when you might have felt judgment before listening to this, you might have felt perceived in a way that by others that affects you negatively, you know, for no good reason. And that, with homelessness especially, is a really big one. You know, there's such a judgment piece that sometimes is huge weight on people that I see.
I mean, obviously, on stage, there's going to be nine speakers on the 14th of March. I think, you know, the whole premise of TEDx Ibiza is a community event. It's put together voluntarily by a lot of amazing people who are in this incredible team. I'm sure you've met many of them. And I think, you know, I wonder what you think people have been experiencing when they're homeless, and what, you know, what has that taught you? Perhaps, if this idea of TEDx is to take away, you know, this new idea worth sharing, what you think that, you know, homeless people have perhaps experienced in their singularity that perhaps the rest of society has missed?
Yeah, it's, I think that there's something in homelessness in itself specifically, although I try to not concentrate so much, trying to sort of like remove that even as something, because really what we're looking at here is, yeah, a human being for whatever reason who is like currently in this situation. And I'm not to sort of be definitive, but yeah, there's something in what you're saying. It's very real. It's that, I think it's symptomatic of like, we were never supposed to be isolated to the extent that people are in this situation. In whatever we're going through, the isolation of that is no way part of how we've evolved as people, and how I think we see, of course, the very clear like results of that with people trying to synthesize this connection through any means necessary, which I would most certainly do myself with whatever it would be that would get me through the day. So yeah, I think the isolation that perhaps people felt just like in certain ways in their life, and maybe even during COVID, that time, I guess we got a little snippet of that, what it's like to be sort of starved of these very basic like connections that we kind of take for granted. That can be the day-to-day reality for people for month upon month, year upon year. But I guess, look, I haven't experienced it, so I don't know. I think, but what I can say is, I guess more broadly, the universal kind of feeling and message for me is yeah, like togetherness and connection and being with one another in this way. It's something that's a part of all of us. And I remain open to everybody in my life. A big one for me is if I want to practice a word like empathy that I really have to use, like to lead with, like a lot of the work that I do, it's not just about homelessness. It's about the guy who's you know, maybe something a bit more repulsive for me, which is like someone driving some flashy, bright car, playing loud music out the window, like whatever it is, like something I have to check myself on. Somebody who might be on the other end of the spectrum, who's like treading on people to get where they need to in their life and only care about like their own individual success. There's still a human being there. There's still a person there that's much more than the life that's being portrayed on the outside, to their status, their role, what they've become, part of their conditioning. So it teaches me this work on the street when I'm doing this stuff to also take a word like that and see if I can practice that full spectrum in my life. Because I think that's what maybe we're lacking in the times we're living in, is like those values and trying to connect through that space. Like, what do we value rather than getting stuck on the divisiveness and the surface of what we're seeing? It's like, what values do we share? Like, and trying to sort of use them as a way to communicate in some way.
It's interesting what you're saying there about, you know, this case of like isolation and, you know, disconnect that we obviously definitely experienced in the COVID era. And I think that was, you know, probably in Ibiza when we really discovered that, you know, we have this monoculture and we have this reliance and this economic structure that is formulated and built purely on the club world. You know, like, you can say that it's not, but actually it is, because when the clubs were shut and there was no nightlife going on here, and well, I wouldn't say it just nightlife, but also tourism. You know, tourism is and still remains to be our primary economic infrastructure, and when that's taken away, you know, you had a lot of people queuing up at the food bank, and you know, people were starving. Basically, that really was a real problem here. And I think, you know, Ibiza is very polarized in some way, and there's not this, you know, you don't see a lot of homelessness. If you go into Ibiza town, maybe on a Friday or Saturday night in the winter specifically, you might experience some of it. But I think it's a lens that, you know, we don't get to witness society through, particularly in Ibiza. So I'm wondering, like, with this empathetic, you know, storyline that you are obviously experiencing firsthand, but I think that somehow there is a disconnection from that somehow in Ibiza to a degree. And obviously, you know, it can be very uncomfortable to feel empathetic to when you're not, I don't know, when you're not used to seeing a certain walk of life. Like, I don't want to say that the whole of Ibiza is a certain way, but there's definitely a large proportion of it. So I wonder what's maybe one of the hardest things that you've witnessed or heard through this journey that you've been on for, I don't know how long it's been now, but maybe 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, it's about 10 years. I had, Les Gray, my beard, and probably more here myself. It's a beautiful question, because I also appreciate you sharing what you did. So, like, you know, to think about all these different environments that we live in, and you know, they're all so different. I suppose even somewhere like Ibiza, you know, I speak at some places where the communities are quite, I mean, for instance, like, there's a school I've spoken at before in a town in Colorado where it's this little ski town, and it's very privileged and like very beautiful there, but there's always going to be people who are cleaning the hotels. I tell you that there's always a community of people, and the same in Ibiza. And I've seen it when I've been to Ibiza as well, that you might not see it as obviously on the surface, but you better believe there's going to be people living in conditions you might not see. But for me, it's less like, I guess we have to be authentic to ourselves. Like, it's not about going out of our way of what feels right to us to go and approach situations that just aren't in some way natural. I'd say for me, it's like in our daily life, whatever that looks like, trying to connect to a place in ourselves that recognizing empathy is something that it's not just a downward facing thing. It's about everybody. It's about all of us. And the vulnerability piece is huge as well, because we hear that spoken about a lot, but it's like, what happens when we remove the mask of who we are? And that can take place in a work setting, in a club setting, in Ibiza, the way people work together, the way people commune together amongst the party setting. It's like, when we remove the masks of like trying to keep up appearances or whatever that means, it's like, that's what we can connect in, like a really, like a beautiful space underneath that. So, you know, some of the hardest situations, I suppose, to answer that question, yeah, I've been in places where, you know, tent encampments in big cities in America or in India or wherever that may be, I've traveled to do this work. I actually find there's a, underneath the surface of these situations where on the outside, they can have, there's a lot of very interesting energy, a lot of stimulation, a lot of people really struggling in many ways. So it can feel quite confronting. And your body does have almost like a fight or flight thing that happens because you can feel fear in those moments just because it's a lot of energy. But I found that the interactions I have with people in some of those settings are amongst the realest that I have in my life, like very real, raw interactions with people that when you get beneath that level, I just value so much. It doesn't have any of the BS that sometimes is like in life in different settings where you have to really get through the la-di-da-ness and the surface of how we interact and have conversations. Like people are just, it's very real space that you share with people. And I really value that. I really value that. I think part of me, what was moving in this work too, as well, I was like, have beautiful friends, like amazing relationships. And I was happy in my life in many ways, but I was searching for something. I think that underneath it, like having, yeah, just give me something that's real, that's kind of not just this conversation in a loud bar that we're sharing, trading, whatever our life is in our work or what we do. It's like getting to know one another on like a deeper level. I think looking back now, something was moving in me to sort of to experience life in that way with people.
What do you think was like missing in you that made you see the world from that perspective and perhaps want to reach out and do this work in the first place?
Yeah, well, I think how long have you got? I'll try. I mean, I have to be real as well. I'm a very different person when I started this work. Like I was enjoying my life in many ways and in a certain level, but I hadn't really looked within myself to really kind of, yeah, really confront parts of my, to really get to know myself on a deep level. And this work has actually been a real process in growth and learning myself, because with each person and experience, there's something shared there that's taught me a lot about me especially the people, right? The way I spend time with people in this way, it's been something healing for me as well. You know, I mean, it's been interesting. Like, I suppose I didn't have any really healthy male role models in my life when I was younger, and not any kind of rites of passage, as we find like a lot in the West too, as well. Like from a boy to a man, like a lot of men. Yeah, you learn this late on, you know, to really grow up, to really step into maturation as a human being. It's happened through this process for me. I spend a lot of time with men actually, who are like, yeah, deeply wounded and in that process on the street in different ways. Women too, but a lot of men, and I think some of that too as well has healed a lot of that. Sort of that part of me, or at least let's not say healed, but just brought me into a space to be in this world where, yeah, it's given me a lot. And I'd be lying if I said to as well, I mean, what I do is falling under these words, do something for nothing, but that's a bit of a, you know, it's not real. Like that's in the action of having things in your life that are not transactional. You know, it's important to go out and do things that are just purely for the intention of what it is, but it's never doing anything for nothing because you're a part of that. And I wouldn't lie and pretend that I'm not part of every interaction I have. And I receive a lot from the people that I meet. I receive a lot through the process of what I've been through. So I've forgotten what your question is, but that's what it's like. I'm just talking now.
No, I was just wondering what was missing in you, but you've definitely answered the question. But I think, you know, what you brought to me through that response is, you know, this is, I think, your guest number 217 of this podcast. And wow. So I've been making this for 8 years, since March 3rd, 2018.
Amazing.
And incredible. I don't get paid for doing it. And I'd often ask myself, what the hell am I doing? Spending hours, not just hours of time chatting to people, but, you know, researching and finding guests and, you know, emailing people and obviously editing. I don't, you know, have an editor that cuts this up for me either. And, you know, I just love hearing people's story. And I sometimes turn up to these interviews on a day when I've arranged it, you know, months in advance, and I'm really not in the mood. But it's not negotiable. It's like, I'm not going to, you know, ask to have a conversation with someone and then blow them out. A lot of people do that in Ibiza. But I think, consequently, I feel like making it is like a selfish act, because I get so much joy and pleasure from it. And even if I turn up in like a weird, strange headspace, by the end of the conversation, I'm feeling amazing and I've had the most incredible time and I've learned something new and I've spoken to someone amazing like you who's doing something, you know, outstanding and different and special. And yeah, I come out the other end going, you know, I still committed to doing that thing that I said I was going to do. And somehow that changes my life in a very positive way. And I think I can just imagine that you probably walk out into the street and you meet some random person that you had never envisaged that you were just going to walk into their life in that moment. And then suddenly you're doing something amazing for them. And actually, you probably feel a hell of a lot better on the other side of that encounter.
100%. Thanks so much for sharing that, Joe, because I think it's really important. Like everybody, it's beautiful, the work you're doing. It really is, because it's like whatever that, you know, there's I've been reading Joseph Campbell recently, and he talks a lot about mythology and different things. But when he was asked in an interview about, like, what would you say to people, especially young people in this world today? And this was recorded in the 1980s, but I think it rings true now as much as it did then. And he talks about following your highest enthusiasm, and that this is derived, enthusiasm originally is derived from a Greek, ancient Greek word, which is essentially like the roots of the meaning is it's enthusiasm means to be filled with God. Like it represents like divine, energetic, joyous state within us. And when you think about what is following our highest enthusiasm, this is like one's true purpose, you know, and this is going to look different for everybody. But clearly, like the reason you're doing this, you're showing up for this is, as you said, all of the work and the hours you put into it, it's that, you know, it's aligning with like this part of yourself that it's like your purpose and your highest enthusiasm. And that's going to look very different for everybody. So, you know, me sharing this and me being on the stage at TEDx Ibiza, what's beautiful is we've got amazing speakers. I can't wait to hear the other talks and there'll be obviously like we're on the stage in this moment, but we're all humans, people in the audience. Like there's no higher, low or different. I'd love to hear from everybody in that audience, because I think each one of us, I think, underneath the, you know, life of everything, that's what we've become and some positive, negative condition or whatever, there's like this part of ourselves that can connect to this space. So that's the deal, I think, really, is that it's going to look very different for everybody. Mine's happened to be through my unique predicament here, and like what it's like it's become homelessness, and it's really about our story as people and like what we feel and how we meet one another in this life. It's going to look different for somebody else, but I think that's the best commitment we can make is trying to feel what that is for us, you know? And then I know that the universal part of that for me and the times we're living in, and I speak about this in the talk, is reclaiming our presence in the time we're living, because it's hard to listen to that voice unless you're really present, and it's hard to show up for people in this way unless you're really dropping to presence. I know it's very cliche, how do we do that? But it really does come back to that for me. Life is lived in this moment. This is where life exists. So the more we can drop into that day to day, I think that's where we can find our unique version of this.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is that, you know, everybody glorifies this idea of being busy. It's like, you know, oh no, I'm too busy for this. I'm too busy for that. And I often say that to myself, my God, I haven't got time to go and do this podcast this week because it's just going to chew up way too much of my time. And the 1 year, I think out of 8 years, the 1 year I managed to make a podcast for 52 weeks and went weekly for the entirety of the year, obviously unpaid. It was just like, it was the best. I felt like when I remember like, you know, hitting publish on that final episode that year. And it was just like, I did that thing, you know, I have no idea why I did that, but I feel incredible because I did that thing and I've promoted all these amazing people doing all this incredible work, you know, and I didn't get anything back from it apart from joy, actually. And that was just like, it sounds so cheesy, but it was just, I felt really happy. You know, it was like something I took so much pleasure from. And I was like, that was it. That was the gift for me of all that time that I gave. Like, I didn't really need anything other than that. And everyone keeps banging on about, you know, monetizing this and monetizing that. And of course, on some days I go, Christ, I really should be being paid for this. But actually, I just don't. Yeah, at this point in the game, it's just not necessary. And I wonder how that, you know, when those moments come when you're obviously not living in England anymore and you like traveling the world and going here and going there, you've obviously got a busy life. We're going to use the B word. But, you know, what does that look like for you in those moments? What's the process that you fall back on and say, nope, I'm not too busy for this. This is my purpose, and this is what I'm going to go and do today.
Yeah. Well, I can't answer with that auto, like, the conversational part of honoring some of what you said, because I think it's really, well, firstly, I have to say, you might have guessed from the conversation we're having already that if that's cheesy to you, then my life is filled with melted cheese. I'm like a melting, disgusting, cheesy person, because like the richness and the joy you got as the trade-off, that stuff is like, what else? Isn't that just the best trade-off you could possibly have? I mean, look, I have to be real with you. Like, money for me is, especially as somebody, like, this is the thing, to cut through the, hey, listen to me, I'm a do-gooder doing this good work. Like, I want to be very real. I'm 38, right? I'm a different person from when I started doing this work. I'm really feeling the need more than ever to have that security in the form of like more room to breathe easy with money, with resources. I'm somebody who I lived to my means, and I've moved through this world. I quit my job in the salon when I started doing this work about 3 months after I began doing this. So nearly 10 years ago, to follow this feeling. And this feeling, I haven't had a, let's say, quote unquote, job since then, because I go and I give talks and that's how I get paid. And I do all these projects and I've traveled around the world. So it's incredible that by following this feeling, I've been able to do and travel and do all these amazing things. But somebody who's in their late 30s, moving into their 40s, like that, I'd like to actually have, I'm feeling like very ready to if a family and that came into my life in a way in these next few years, to be in a place where I have more security and resources. So we need money also to create and to do the things I do. So I acknowledge that making money and really honoring what that is important. But yeah, this piece really, I guess it's like the balance, you know, we'll know when we're in a point in life where we need to sort of be more disciplined to create what we need to also think, you know, logically and like in a responsible way about like how we can bring energy in the form of money to help us in that process, to support the people we need in our life. And then you might be listening to this and you might be like, well, actually, I am pretty comfortable. And to be honest, I'm in a place where I know I can breathe pretty easily and I have access to resources. Well, then the balance is probably going to be, well, are you following your enthusiasm, as we mentioned a minute ago? Are you following your purpose? So I think it's this dance perhaps between both. And then there really is the extremities of these two things, because I also recognize if you are so hard up, this conversation might just not be relatable at all, because you're thinking, well, this is great. Thanks very much. Time, energy, vulnerability, like connection. Cool. I'm like underslept, overstressed. I have 3 kids. I'm a single mom. I mean, I come from this background, you know, my mom was a single mom with 3 children by the time she was 25, and living a very different life than I am living. And she did everything to make all that work in the most beautiful ways for us, but it required a lot of sacrifice. So yes, yeah, so this thing is there's, but then I do believe that the being piece and all of it, whatever it looks like, it's about like how we can show up and be more human in our day-to-day lives. But yes, like I think we have to balance, and money for me isn't something evil at all. In fact, it's something I've been really working through, my lack and scarcity stuff to bring more of that into my life. It's not something I push away anymore. I used to be in a punk band. It was quite a journey, really. It was like, yeah, I started music and then hairdressing and different things, different phases of my life. And now I think I'm in the best place ever to realize that it's all here. None of it's good or bad or evil. It's just about our intention in this process. You know,
I could literally talk to you for hours, but unfortunately we're out of time. And, cool. I think that's a beautiful place. What was the name of the punk band, just so we can look it up?
You're not going to find much, but it was me and some best friends. We were called the Dead City Stereo. You're not going to find much on it. But then I also toured for a bit with this band, The Computers, who were amazing too as well. But I was like more like a roadie, and I'd play guitar for a few songs here and there while a singer got in the band and got messy with everybody. But it was a good, music's always been part of my life to this day. I still play my guitar. But Joe, it's been a pleasure. Honestly, thank you so much for having me. Really lovely conversation. I appreciate everything, you know, like you're putting together to get this out there to people.
Appreciate it. And we can't wait to see you when you're over from Mexico in Ibiza. Let us know. And thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you on stage on the 14th of March.
Lovely. Look forward to it. Cheers.
Thank you so much. Ciao for now.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel.